Welcome to the September edition of the IASB podcast. My name is Claire Short and I am part of the communications team. Today I'm joined by Sue Lloyd, Vice Chair of the International Accounting Standard Board, as well as board member Daryl Scott. Daryl will be finishing his second term on the board this month and will say goodbye to the IASB after 10 years on the board. And it's a real pleasure to have you both here today. Sue, Daryl's departure is just one of a couple of changes on the board recently. Can you fill us in?
So this month's meeting was a bit bittersweet, so having to say goodbye to Daryl, which is sad, but on the flip side, we welcome to the board table our newest board member, Zach Garst. Was his first board meeting. He comes in filling one of the Americas seats. He comes to us with an investor background. He looked at credit risk perspective, so he's a good complement to Nick Anderson's skills. And next month, following Daryl leaving, we'll be joined by Bruce McKenzie, who will take over the Africa seat. So exciting times for the board. We say goodbye sadly to Daryl, but hello to Zach and to Bruce.
Thanks, Sue. Before we get into the details of what was discussed at the board meeting held on the 22nd and 23rd of September, I'll just catch everyone up on some other news that's happened since the last meeting in July. A particular milestone was the finalisation of the board's response to the ongoing reform of interbank offered rates and other interest rate benchmarks. A package of amendments to IFRS standards was issued at the end of August. Also published in August, this time by the IFRS Foundation trustees, was the updated due process handbook, which outlines the standard setting steps taken by the board and interpretations committee. You can find details on both these releases on ifrs.org, specifically on the news page or the project pages. Now let's turn our attention to the September meeting. Among the topics discussed were management commentary and rate regulated activities. Daryl, can you tell us more?
Thanks, Claire. And I'll start with management commentary and perhaps a little bit of background to the project first. We developed the original management commentary practice statement in 2010 as a kind of a manual or starter kit of sorts to help preparers in writing their management reports. And I think really it was about acknowledging that as important as the financial statements are in themselves, they do need context. And that context is typically provided through a robust, well-structured management commentary. The practice statement isn't mandatory, but we understand that it has been adopted in part or in whole by some standard setters, regulators, and rulemakers around the world. And we understand that it's fulfilled a very useful function. But since the original publication of that document, the financial landscape has changed significantly in at least two aspects. Companies themselves have evolved. They've become more complex and they've come to rely and be valued far more based on their intangible assets. Things like brands, know-how, algorithms, and customer base, and the like. And then beyond the company, issues such as sustainability and socio-economic policies are seen to affect the value proposition of companies more. So we understand that these two factors have really together raised the importance of the context that management commentary provides. And we've come to the conclusion that some of these things really weren't anticipated when the practice statement was originally written. And so the board is working on updating or revising the practice statement. In previous statements, in previous meetings up until now, we've discussed the various content areas of the management report, including in particular performance of the company and the position of the company at a point in time. This month, we really got into some of the slightly more administrative details and talked about the status of the practice statement itself and the procedures that were going to be involved or what we thought should be involved in actually issuing a management commentary. Firstly, we decided to retain the existing statement or status of the practice statement as a non-mandatory document. But we decided that if a company either voluntarily or is required by some other body to apply the statement, it needs to make an explicit statement of compliance. If a company only partially chooses to apply the requirements, either because some of the requirements are in conflict with local regulations or for other reasons, it's allowed to state compliance with the statement as long as at the same time it also explicitly states what requirements it has not complied with. Finally, we looked at some of the other requirements around the process of issuing and preparing management commentary, such as specifically identifying the component of your financial statements that is the management commentary, explicitly stating the date on which management commentary was authorized for issue, and also explicitly stating who authorized the management commentary. Whole package taken together, we expect to publish a consultation document in the first quarter of next year. Moving on to rate-regulated activities, some companies are subject to regulations that stipulate how much and when they can charge their customers. IFRSs are largely silent on how those regulations should be treated for accounting purposes, and that has hindered the comparability and understandability of financial statements. So the board embarked on a project, and the objective of this project is to develop an accounting model that will help companies to account for these transactions, for those transactions that are actually subject to this specified type of regulatory environment. We're very close to the end of the first phase of the project, the exposure draft phase of the project, and the staff are actually currently working on the exposure draft with a target date for publication of January. The board discussed a number of sweep issues, some of which actually arose during the balloting process of the document. And that led us to deciding this month to revise the definition of a regulatory asset and a regulatory liability to make it easier for users of the standard to understand. We also decided to provide companies an implementation period of between 18 and 24 months from the date of the final publication of the standard. And we decided to extend the comment period of upcoming publication from 120 to 150 days.
Thanks, Daryl. The next topic discussed was business combinations under common control. Sue, can you take us through the developments on this project as well as the final project that was discussed at the meeting, extractive activities?
Sure. So firstly, business combinations under common control, or BCUCC, as we lovingly call it for short. So the objective of this project is to consider whether we should develop specific requirements in IFRS to tell people how to account for business combinations under common control. So this is sort of group restructurings where, for example, a sister company might acquire its sister, but the ultimate parent retains control. In July, we gave the green light to the staff to begin drafting the discussion paper, and we're working towards a November publication date for that. So at this meeting, we discussed the comment period. We decided to allow a 180-day comment period, partly because of the difficult situation with COVID-19 that our stakeholders are dealing with, so that we can ensure they get high-quality feedback. And also, it's a discussion paper that introduces quite a few new ideas, so give people time to really, you know, stop and think about what we're proposing and give us their considered feedback. The next thing is extractive activities. So this is a research project. So the board's still in the process of gathering evidence to help us really to decide whether to develop proposals to replace what was put in place as a sort of temporary standard, IFRS 6. At this meeting, what we looked at was a paper that the staff put together where they summarised what they have found in terms of reporting requirements and disclosure practices around the world for disclosure about reserve and resource information for entities with extractive activities. So it wasn't a decision-making meeting. We weren't asked for any questions. It was rather a discussion and highlighting a few areas where we wanted some more information. And we look forward to continuing that discussion at future board meetings.
Thanks, Sue. This month, the Interpretations Committee held a meeting, and that meeting will be covered in detail in the dedicated podcast, which is due to be released in early October. But the board this month did hear an update on the topic of maintenance and consistent application. Sue, can you fill us in?
Sure, Claire. So at this meeting, we discussed a sweep issue that's come up in the drafting that the staff is working on at the moment, where we're looking at addressing a narrow scope amendment to do with the accounting for sale and leaseback transactions. At this meeting, the staff brought back an issue that's come up in drafting, where they've decided that in the document that we put out, we should add another proposal over and above what we discussed previously about how to subsequently measure the leaseback in a sale and leaseback transaction. So what we're planning to do now is to propose to specify how the right of use asset and the lease liability should be measured at the inception of a sale and leaseback transaction, and to propose requiring a seller lessee to use the present value of expected lease payments as a basis for measuring the value of the right of use asset and lease liability on the transaction.
Thanks, Sue. September also saw another milestone as the IFRS Foundation was gearing up for its first ever virtual conference on 28th and 29th September. Held over 2 days, the conference combined the annual IFRS Foundation conference that was due to be held in Madrid earlier this year, as well as the annual World Standard Setters Conference. More information can be found on our website. That's it for the September edition of the IASB podcast. But before we round off the episode, I'd just like to say thank you to Daryl, a regular guest on the podcast, for his 10 years on the board. Sue, do you have anything to add?
Well, I'd be sorry to see Daryl go. He's always been a really helpful and friendly colleague as well. And it seems particularly odd, I have to say, Daryl, you're such a well-travelled board member. And when we were having a conversation back in March, when I was saying to you, I think perhaps you should stay in South Africa for the March board meeting, I never, ever in a million years predicted that you would never be back in person for a board meeting for the rest of your term. So that's really an odd way to finish up. We're going to miss you.
Thanks, Sue. I think I came down to South Africa with the view of being here for a long weekend at the beginning of March, and I haven't been back since. So I'm still coming to terms with the fact that it's all coming to an end at this sort of remote distance.
Thank you, Sue and Daryl, for joining me today. All the best for your future endeavours, Daryl. We'll keep an eye on what you get up to. Listeners can find all episodes of our podcasts on our website, as well as on YouTube and your podcast player. You'll also find the full IASB updates and the updated work plan on ifrs.org. If you have any comments on this podcast, please email communications@ifrs.org. Until next time, keep well.